Chapter 4. Mr. Wiggles. For the next 3 days, I threw myself with abandon into our new puppy. I lay on the floor with him and let him scamper all over me. I wrestled with him. I used an old hand towel to play tug-of-war with him, and was surprised at how strong he already was. He followed me everywhere and tried to gnaw on anything he could get his teeth around. It took him just 1 day to discover the best thing about his new home, toilet paper. He disappeared into the bathroom and 5 seconds later came racing back out, the end of the toilet paper roll clenched in his teeth, a paper ribbon unrolling behind him as he sprinted across the house. The place looked like it had been decorated for Halloween. Every half hour or so, I would lead him into the backyard to relieve himself. When he had accidents in the house, I scolded him. When he peed outside, I placed my cheek against his and praised him in my sweetest voice. And when he pooped outside, I carried on as though he had just delivered the winning Florida lotto ticket. When Jenny returned from Disney World, I saw in my young wife a calm, gentle, nurturing side I had not known existed. She held him, she caressed him, she played with him, she fussed over him. She combed through every strand of his fur in search of fleas and ticks. She rose every couple of hours through the night, night after night, to take him outside for bathroom breaks. That, more than anything, was responsible for him becoming fully housebroken in just a few short weeks. Mostly, she fed him. Following the instructions on the bag, we gave Marley 3 large bowls of puppy chow a day. He woofed down every morsel in a matter of seconds. What went in came out, of course, and soon our backyard was as inviting as a minefield. Marley was growing at a furious pace. Like one of those amazing jungle vines that can cover a house in hours, he was expanding exponentially in all directions. Each day he was a little longer, a little wider, a little taller, a little heavier. He was 21 pounds when I brought him home, and within weeks was up to 50. His paws were enormous, his flanks already rippled with muscle, and his chest almost as broad as a bulldozer. Just as the books promised, his slip of a puppy tail was becoming as thick and powerful as an otter's. What a tail it was! Every last object in our house that was at knee level or below was knocked asunder by Marley's wildly wagging weapon. He cleared coffee tables, scattered magazines, knocked framed photographs off shelves, sent beer bottles and wine glasses flying. Every item that was not bolted down migrated to higher ground safely above the sweep of his swinging mallet. Our friends with children would visit and marvel, "Your house is already baby-proofed!" Marley didn't actually wag his tail. He wagged his whole body, starting with the front shoulders and working backward. He was like the canine version of a slinky. At no time did he wiggle more than when he had something in his mouth. His reaction to any situation was the same. Grab the nearest shoe or pillow or pencil, really any item would do, and run with it. Some of the objects he grabbed were small enough to conceal, and this especially pleased him. He seemed to think he was getting away with something, but Marley would never have made it as a poker player. When he had something to hide, he could not mask his glee. His body would quiver, his head would bob from side to side, and his entire rear end would swing in a sort of spastic dance. We called it the Marley Mambo. "All right, what do you got this time?" As I approached, he would begin evasive action, waggling his way around the room, his hips sashaying, head flailing up and down like a whinnying filly's, so overjoyed with his forbidden prize, he could not contain himself. When I would finally get him cornered and pry open his jaws, I never came up empty-handed. Paper towels, wadded Kleenex, grocery receipts, wine corks, paper clips, chess pieces, bottle caps. It was like a salvage yard in there. One day I pried open his jaws and peered in to find my paycheck plastered to the roof of his mouth. Within weeks, we had a hard time remembering what life had been like without our new boarder. Quickly, we fell into a routine. I started each morning before the first cup of coffee by taking him for a brisk walk down to the water and back. After breakfast and before my shower, I patrolled the backyard with a shovel, burying his landmines in the sand at the back of the lot. Jenny left for work before 9, and I seldom left the house before 10, first locking Marley out in the concrete bunker with a fresh bowl of water and a host of toys. By 12:30, Jenny was home on her lunch break, when she would give Marley his midday meal and throw him a ball in the backyard until he was tuckered out. In the early week, she also made a quick trip home in the middle of the afternoon to let him out. After dinner, most evenings, we walked together with him back down to the waterfront, where we would stroll along the intracoastal as the yachts from Palm Beach idled by in the glow of the sunset. Stroll is probably the wrong word. Marley strolled like a runaway locomotive strolls. He surged ahead, he veered left and right, darting to every mailbox and shrub, sniffing, panting, and peeing without fully stopping. He circled behind us, wrapping the leash around our ankles, before lurching forward again, nearly tripping us. When someone approached with another dog, Marley would bolt at them joyously, rearing up on his hind legs when he reached the end of his leash, dying to make friends. "He sure seems to love life," one dog owner commented, and that about said it all. He was still small enough that we could win these leash tug-of-wars, but with each week the balance of power was shifting. He was growing bigger and stronger. It was obvious that before long he would be more powerful than either of us. We knew we would need to rein him in and teach him to heel properly before he dragged us to humiliating deaths beneath the wheels of a passing car. Our friends who were veteran dog owners told us not to rush the obedience regimen. "It's too early," one of them advised. "Enjoy his puppyhood while you can. It'll be gone soon enough, and then you can get serious about training him." That is what we did, which is not to say that we let him totally have his way. We set rules and tried to enforce them consistently. Beds and furniture were off limits. Drinking from the toilet, sniffing crotches, and chewing chair legs were actionable offenses, though apparently worth suffering a scolding for. Still, for all his juvenile antics, Marley was serving an important role in our home and our relationship. Jenny's transformation from cold-hearted plant killer to nurturing dog mom continued to amaze me. I think she amazed herself a little. She was a natural. One day, Marley began gagging violently. Before I even fully registered that he was in trouble, Jenny was on her feet. She swooped in, pried his jaws open with one hand, and reached deep into his gullet with the other, pulling out a large saliva-coated wad of cellophane. All in a day's work. Marley let out one last cough, banged his tail against the wall, and looked up at her with an expression that said, "Can we do it again?" As we grew more comfortable with the new member of our family, we became more comfortable talking about expanding our family in other ways. Within weeks of bringing Marley home, we decided to stop using birth control. That's not to say we decided to get pregnant, which would have been way too bold a gesture for two people who had dedicated their lives to being as indecisive as possible. Rather, we backed into it, merely deciding to stop trying not to get pregnant. The logic was convoluted, we realized, but it somehow made us both feel better. No pressure, none at all. We weren't trying for a baby. We were just going to let whatever happened, happen. Let nature take its course. Que sera, sera. Frankly, we were terrified. We had several sets of friends who had tried for months, years even, to conceive without luck. Also troubling was a little secret from our past. In those blindly passionate early days of our relationship, when desire had a stranglehold on anything resembling common sense, we had thrown caution into the corner with our clothes and had sex with reckless abandon, using no birth control whatsoever, not just once, but many times. It was incredibly dumb, and looking back on it several years later, we should have been kissing the ground in gratitude for miraculously escaping an unwanted pregnancy. Instead, all either of us could think was, "What's wrong with us?" We were both convinced conceiving was going to be no easy task. So as our friends announced their plans to try to get pregnant, we remained silent. Jenny was simply going to stash her birth control prescription away in the medicine cabinet and forget about it. If she ended up pregnant, fantastic. If she didn't, well, we weren't actually trying anyway now, were we? Winter in West Palm Beach is a glorious time of year, marked by crisp nights and warm, dry, sunny days. We ate all our meals on the back porch, squeezed fresh orange juice from the fruit of the backyard tree each morning, and slept beneath open windows, the gardenia-scented air wafting over us. On one of those gorgeous days in late March, Jenny invited a friend from work to bring her basset hound Buddy over for a dog play date. Buddy was a rescued pound dog with the saddest face I had ever seen. We let the two dogs loose in the backyard and off they bounded. Old Buddy wasn't quite sure what to make of this hyper-energized yellow juvenile who raced and streaked and ran tight circles around him. But he took it in good humor, and the two of them romped and played together for more than an hour before they both collapsed in the shade of the mango tree, exhausted. A few days later, Marley started scratching and wouldn't stop. He was clawing so hard at himself, we were afraid he might draw blood. Jenny dropped to her knees and began one of her routine inspections, working her fingers through his coat, parting his fur as she went to see his skin below. After just a few seconds, "Look at this!" I peered over her shoulder. Fleas. Swarms of them. Even if they were slow enough to catch, which they were not, there were simply too many of them to even begin picking off. Of course, we blamed Buddy without having any solid proof. Jenny had images of not only the dog being infested, but our entire home, too. She grabbed her car keys and ran out the door. A half hour later, she was back with a bag filled with flea baths and flea powders and flea sprays and flea foams and flea dips. There was a special comb designed to remove insect eggs. She was back in assassin mode, this time to protect her loved ones, and she meant business. She scrubbed Marley in the laundry tub using special soaps. She then mixed up the dip and poured it over him until every inch of him was saturated. As he was drying in the garage, smelling like a miniature Dow chemical plant, Jenny vacuumed furiously, floors, walls, carpets, curtains, upholstery. And then she sprayed. "You think we nailed the little buggers?" I asked when we were finally finished. "I think we did," she said. We checked Marley daily, peering between his toes, under his ears, beneath his tail. We could find no signs of a flea anywhere. We had annihilated the enemy.